kamstanyakamasaja matnantin
jananim hari
gahitva dadimantanam
yashedat pritim avahan.
Dressed in a saffron yellow sari, with a belt tied about her full hips, Mother Yashoda pulled on the turning rope, laboring considerably, her bangles and earrings moving and vibrating, and her whole body shaking. Because of her intense love for her child, her breasts were wet with milk. Her face, with its very beautiful eyebrows, was wet with perspiration, and Malati flowers were falling from her hair. Purport. Anyone who desires to be Krishna conscious in motherly affection or parental affection should contemplate the bodily features of Mother Yashoda. It is not that one should desire to become like Yashoda, for this is Mayavad. Either in parental affection or conjugal love, friendship or servitorship, in any way, we must follow in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, not try to become like them. Therefore, this description is provided here. Advanced devotees must cherish this description, always thinking of Mother Yashoda's features. How she was dressed, how she was working and perspiring, how beautifully the flowers were arranged in her hair, and so on. One should take advantage of the full description provided here by thinking of Mother Yashoda in maternal affection for Krishna. Can we open the window more? Am I the only one who feels stuffy in here? Or? You don't? Yeah. Whose camera is this? So we'll do today's first, the word for word. Tom, unto Mother Yashoda. Stanya Kama. Krishna, who was desiring to drink her breast milk. Asajya. Appearing before her. Matnantim. While she was churning butter. Jananim. To the mother. Hari. Krishna. Gahita. Catching. Dadimantanam, the churning rod. Yashedat, forbade. Pritim avahan, creating a situation of love and affection. Translation. While Mother Yashoda was churning butter, Lord Krishna, desiring to drink the milk of her breast, appeared before her. And in order to increase her transcendental pleasure, he caught hold of the churning rod and began to prevent her from churning. Purport. Krishna was sleeping within the room, and as soon as he got up, he became hungry and went to his mother. Wanting to stop her from churning and drink the milk of her breasts, he stopped her from moving the churning rod. We were speaking yesterday about how this Damodar Leela shows determination in love. There are two kinds of determination you're dealing with here. The Bhakta Nishta, the determination of the devotee to care for Krishna. Mother Yashoda is completely determined to take care of Krishna like her son. She's totally focused on that. Her mellow or flavor that she's acting on is shuddhavatsalyaras, pure parental love. Krishna has to be taken care of. She has to do it. Otherwise, what will become of Krishna? That's her determination. She's going to do everything necessary to raise her child properly. And then Lord Krishna has his own determination. Swanishta. The determination of Lord Krishna is that I will reciprocate with my devotees. You'll see both of these determinations in this lila. Now, you may remember how in the previous chapter, Mother Yashoda had seen in Krishna's mouth the entire cosmic manifestation, as well as herself. And she was philosophically speculating, what is this? She was thinking when she saw the whole cosmic manifestation in Krishna's mouth. Am I asleep or dreaming? No, it can't be. I'm wide awake. Or am I deranged? No, I'm in good health. Or maybe the demigods, they are playing games with me. But I'm just an insignificant woman. Why would the demigods want to play games with me using their Deva Maya? Then she concluded, some or other my child has these strange abilities. That was her conclusion. Shukadeva Goswami explains that although for a moment she saw the truth, she saw the Supreme Personality Godhead in his opulences, the next moment Krishna's yoga maya potency covered her over and she forgot it all, just like you forget a dream when you wake up. You've had that experience dreaming at night. You wake up in the morning and it all fades. By noon, it's all forgotten. You can't even remember what you were dreaming, even if it was a nice dream. So similarly, although Mother Yashoda caught a glimpse of the opulences of the Lord, Krishna's internal potency covered her and stopped her from thinking any further about it, more than just a moment. And once again, she became infused with the emotions of pure motherhood, taking care of Krishna, feeding Krishna, clothing Krishna, bathing Krishna, disciplining Krishna. That's what you're seeing in this Damodar Leela. Mother Yashoda is disciplining Krishna. Now, let us understand what's going on here. Mother Yashoda is dealing with this person who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but she sees him only as her son. In the Vedas, Krishna is presented as the King of Heaven. And in the Upanishads, Krishna is presented as the Supreme Brahman. In the Shastras of Sankhya Yoga, Krishna is presented as Paramatma, the Supersoul. And in so many Vaishnava literatures, Krishna is presented as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Mother Yashoda saw him as her son. She did not care about anything else. She didn't care about Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. She was beyond that. Even Devaki, Krishna's mother in Mathura, she would worship the Lord. But Mother Yashoda didn't do any worship. She just loved her son in pure ecstatic love. She simply saw, he's my son, I have to take care of him. When Prichit Maharaj heard Shukadeva Goswami explaining this situation of Mother Yashoda, naturally as a devotee, he was inquisitive. Devotees are always inquisitive about what Krishna does. When you care for someone, you want to know, what is that person doing? Just like when I come here, I like to hear from all the devotees, what are you doing? How is your day? When you care, you want to empathize, you want to feel what the other person's going through. You want to partake of their activities. That is natural. So, real inquisitiveness is based on love. Pritchett Maharaj loves to hear about Krishna. So he's asking questions in order to stir the emotions, stir the ocean of transcendental emotions. He asked Shukadeva Goswami, Yashoda cha Mahabhaga, papal stanam, papal yasya stanam hari. How did Mother Yashoda get this most rare fortune of having the Supreme Personality of Godhead drink her breast milk? How did such fortune come about? In a subtle way, Pritchett Maharaj is asking, is it possible that someone could have the position of Mother Yashoda by sadhana siddha, perfection achieved by following the rules and regulations of bhakti? So, to answer that question, Shukadeva Goswami explains about Drona and Dara. Upon the order of Lord Brahma, Drona and Dara, they acted in this world as Krishna's mother and father. Their intent was that Krishna would become their son, and then the whole world would benefit by discussing Krishna's pastimes, his childhood pastimes. And in that way, the sum total of material contamination in the world will be purified. In other words, Yashoda and Nanda, they're Nitya Siddha. They're not even ordinary. They're not even jivas. They're expansions of Krishna's. They're expansions of Krishna himself. Personal expansions. They're not ordinary jivas. They're Krishna's potency of a different sort. You can't have the position of Yashoda and Nanda, but you can have the same affection. That is the point. As Prabhupada's explaining in the purport to text 3, it is not that one should desire to become like Yashoda, for this is Mayavad. The point is that the position is already filled. Yashoda Mayi is a person. You can't be her. She is a person, an eternal individual who exists. But you can have the same affection for Krishna as she does. Therefore, the clarification is given in this verse that to follow in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vraja doesn't mean you think you're going to become them. No. But you can get the same taste or affection that they have. For example, in text 3, the description of Mother Yashoda is given. How she's dressed in a saffron yellow sari, and she's pulling on the churning rope, laboring. Her bangles and earrings are moving and vibrating, and her whole body is shaking. The whole purpose of her churning is to try to satisfy Krishna with the tastiest milk products. And while she's churning, she's thinking of her child with such love that her breasts are wet with milk. This is her absorption in devotional service for Krishna's pleasure. Similarly, we should also pray to Krishna that we can be absorbed with affection, with dedication in our service. Sometimes it's asked, why is it that devotees can appear to space out on some days? That you just can fall into an unconscious rut for a few days. It's because they are not in touch with their determination to satisfy Krishna. That they've lost that for a few days due to whatever reason. Past conditioning of the body and mind, inattentiveness to hearing and chanting, rebelliousness in the mind. Oh, What about me? I want to think about me. What's my program for me? And then they realize it's such a stale taste to that, that after a few days they give it up, because after all, they're devotees. After a while, a devotee who's properly following begins to taste flavors that are unavailable to those who are selfish. And so therefore, you quickly give up your spaced out mentality. The spacing out comes from not focusing on Krishna's pleasure. And Mother Yashoda is so absorbed in her service that her breasts are wet with milk, even she's churning the yogurt into butter. Now, have you seen any maternal love like that in this world? This is the standard of real love in the spiritual world. Therefore, we say there's no real love in the material world. Just by thinking of Krishna while she's doing her household affairs, Mother Yashoda's whole sari become wet with milk, flowing out of affection. And she could never accept that her son was anything other than her son. Therefore, if you've read Nectar of Devotion, she describes how all the things in Vrindavan, the miraculous things that Krishna did, were all highly explainable. Because she and Nanda Maharaj worshipped Lord Vishnu so carefully, therefore Lord Vishnu saved her son Krishna from Putana and other demons. As for the lifting of Govardhan Hill, this was actually done by Nanda Maharaj. No way Krishna could have done that. This is how she explained it all. And the knocking down of the Yamala Arjun trees, this was done by a strong wind. Actually, when Krishna was holding Govardhan Hill, Mother Yashoda became stunned watching him. She couldn't embrace him. She was afraid to embrace him because he's holding the hill and she didn't want to disturb him in holding the hill, you know, in a very precarious situation, she thought. So she became stunned, her eyes filled with tears and her throat became choked. Her voice became choked. And that made her even more stunned because since her voice was choked up, she couldn't issue instructions to Krishna. Was she feeling? Look, Krishna, he needs instructions from me in this situation. Just look, he's holding Govardhan Hill. I have to instruct him, but I can't. My tears, my voice is choked up. She just became more stunned. In the association of Yashoda and Nanda, Shikari Goswami points out, all the elder gopas and gopis in Vrindavan increased in their affection for Krishna. Similarly, devotees who follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan, their affection for Krishna also increases. This is the stage of bhakti after you are solid in following the rules and regulations. But if one is not solid in following the rules and regulations of devotional service, there's no question of talking about spontaneous attraction for the Lord and following the residents, following the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. So please understand this intense love that you'd never see in the material world. Therefore, we say there's no love in the material world. Now, Krishna wants to reciprocate. That's his determination. His determination to reciprocate with his devotees is so much that he'll even come under the control of his devotee. Not exactly under the control of the devotee, but under the control of the devotee's love. This is called Vrityasevata. Krishna voluntarily submits to the love of his devotee. Mother Yashoda is feeling separation from Krishna as she's churning, and we discussed yesterday how she was reciting various poems about her son, poems that she had composed and what she had heard in the village from the other gopis. Now Krishna has been sleeping in another room, and he wakes up, and he wants to provoke a loving pastime, as we see in text 4. Pritim avahan. That means creating a situation of love and affection. This is what Krishna is unlimitedly expert at. You see, we're getting such a different appreciation of Krishna than what our fearful, rebellious mentality conjures up in our mind. Oh, Krishna, he's the punisher. Oh, he doesn't notice what I'm doing. I'm doing everything for him. He doesn't notice. And we have all these paranoias. But when we actually hear about Krishna, we see what he does with his devotees. And then we wonder, why am I so afraid? Why am I holding back? Krishna is the unlimited expert at creating a situation of love and affection. Pritim avahan. So therefore, he comes out of the room, approaches his mother who is churning, and he grabs hold of the churning rod to stop her from churning, because he wants to drink her breast milk. Mother Yashoda, she's very pleased by this, and she's thinking, oh, how clever my child is. How clever. Of course, from what I've seen, not that much, all mothers think their child is clever. Just like for a while, all husbands think their wife is beautiful. For a while. So these are just the ways of thinking in the material world. But Mother Yashoda's son is actually clever. But she's not thinking he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She's thinking, my son is so clever. He's unlimitedly clever. Just see how he's grabbing hold of the churning rod to stop me because he wants to drink my breast milk. So then, please, meditate on Mother Yashoda picking Krishna up, putting him on her lap, embracing him, and looking into his beautiful face, and then feeding him. Text 5. Mother Yashoda then embraced Krishna, allowed him to sit down on her lap, and began to look upon the face of the Lord with great love and affection. Because of her intense affection, milk was flowing from her breast. Yes, the milk from Mother Yashoda's breast flows only because of affection, not because of biological force or biological activity. Her body is not under the material biological laws. So please understand, the milk from her breast is flowing into Krishna's mouth simply out of pure love and affection. There's no biological necessity in Krishna's pastimes. That's why it's very difficult for non-devotees to understand Krishna Leela. You're not dealing with material bodies. You're not dealing with material motivations. Everything is based on prema, which is the true necessity for the living being. You know there are three subject matters in the Vedic knowledge. Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Sambandha means to understand your relationship with the Supreme Lord. Abhideya means to act in that relationship with the Supreme Lord. And Prayojana means to attain the ultimate necessity, the love of God. So we have many minor necessities, but why should we neglect the main necessity, the Prayojan, attainment of love for Krishna? That takes a career-like dedication. You should be able to see how your whole life is going to go on in Krishna consciousness. Have that determination that no matter what difficulties are there in material existence, the threefold miseries, adhyatmik, adhibhautik, adhidaivik, miseries of your body and mind, miseries from other living entities, miseries from nature. It's always going to be there. There'll be upsets. Don't think that because you're practicing Krishna consciousness that your material body and material situation is free from upset. No. Krishna promises you in Bhagavad Gita that if you cling tightly to him, your spiritual life will never be vanquished. But as far as things that are made of matter, they're meant to be vanquished. It's like I was talking to Rasyatra yesterday, and she was telling how her children were on the school bus coming from New Varshan school back into the city, and someone suddenly drove in front of the school bus, and the driver had to slam the brakes. So all the kids, they came tumbling over, and Shukadev, he had, I think, a broken arm, and Shukadev had a broken ankle, Varshana had a broken arm. All the other kids were bruised, that's all, but Rasyatra's two kids, they had some broken limbs. So this is the nature of the material world. I was explaining to Shukadeva Varshana, just see how dangerous this world is. I asked Shukadeva, what were you thinking about when you were riding in the bus? He said, I was thinking about school, and then I was thinking about Krishna's pastimes, and then boom! And I asked Varshana, were you praying to Krishna at the time? She said, yes, I was praying to Krishna. Please make the pain go away. So, why should we think that we can live in this world of danger and upheaval and will not experience anything of that? You will experience it, but Krishna promises you that if you stick to your Krishna consciousness, your bhakti will not be disturbed. Your bhakti will not be vanquished. Don't make your life complicated. Try to understand you don't have that much time in your lifetime. You stick to the basics of Krishna consciousness. Stick to the program as Srila Prabhupada has given it. Day after day. And you'll get the result. You will get the result. I can tell you, after more than 30 years of practicing Krishna consciousness, I can tell you the process actually works. It actually works. But we're so impatient about performance of Krishna consciousness. We're so passionate. Instant everything. What do we think is a long time? 2 years is a long time. Right? 2 years. Wow. 2 whole years. It's like some of, not anyone here, but in other places. Some of our young lady devotees who were fortunate in that they didn't have such a degraded teenage life. You know, now they're 19, 20, 21, and they're, you know, now they're intensely longing for companionship. In one sense, it's fortunate because they have, because their curiosity is coming from never having such affairs. That's fortunate. So basically, what you see a 12 or 13 year old or 14 year old going through these days, they're going through at 20 or 21. Suddenly the bell starts to ring. So that's fortunate in one sense. But I just tell them, just wait a few years, just, you know, become more steady. Wait a few years. Oh, 3 whole years until I'm 24. Oh. Oh my God, 3 years, how can I do that? The men aren't much better these days. Men just don't talk about it, they just go out and do it. They don't get on the mental, they just get on the physical. So, because of lust, anger, and greed, lower modes of nature, our conception of time is so small. 3 years is a long time. 10 years is inconceivable, right? 10 years. Can you think of your life 10 years from now? It's a chincha, isn't it? So 10 years. This is what such a demoniac society has done to people. You can't think of your life properly as a whole. Just think, just try to understand it. Your ability to conceive of your whole life has been destroyed. Most people have not a clue that that's what's happened. Just like in the Vedic system, you can easily visualize your whole life because of all the proper social rituals and social classifications for the progress of your lifetime. You can see yourself. A young man can see himself, first I'll be a student of the Vedas, and then I may choose to marry, and then after 25 years of marriage, our family life will wind down by the time we're 50, and then the last stage of life, I'll leave all family affairs completely. So that system, that culture allows you to actually get a grip on your life. Where was it? In Christchurch, not here. We were discussing in the morning Bhagavatam class about Devahuti and Kardamamuni. Kardamamuni was a yogi, and then he, impelled by the Supreme Lord's energy, he wanted to marry. So he married the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, Devahuti. And then they had children. And then when Kardamamuni felt that this is the time, he left home. And Devahuti was in the care of her son, Kapila, who also happened to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Kapila instructed his mother in transcendental knowledge. And then he also left. And Devahuti remained in the home, practicing Krishna consciousness. So there's no surprises in the Vedic system. You can actually see how your whole life is supposed to pan out. And this gives you peace of mind. This gives you simplicity. today when people hear about the traditional Indian system of marriage, which doesn't happen now, even in, except in villages in India. But at the beginning of the 20th century, a girl would be engaged to be married at 8, and then married at 12 or 13 or 14. People say, horrible, oppressive. What does an 8-year-old girl know? What does a 12-year-old girl know? Srila Prabhupada describes how his sister was 12 or 13 and no marriage had been arranged. And the mother was completely in anxiety. She's on the father's case. She's 13, no marriage has been arranged. What are you doing? The father was, I'm trying my best. People can't understand what's the point of that. The point is that to have a peaceful life for the girl. So that by the time she enters puberty, she's secure. She knows, my marriage has been arranged. And the marriage has worked. The parents arranged based on their knowledge of different families. Divorce, no one thought about divorce. So the whole point of the Vedic system is to produce simplicity, focus, and clarity about your life. And that's totally obliterated these days, in case you haven't noticed. Therefore, people can think of their whole life. It's just, whatever will happen. I don't know, but... And you try to be cool, you say, anyway, you just go with it. Yeah, the flow, It's all your learning experience, Rather than just say, I don't know what's going on. I don't have a clue. Because there's no framework for seeing your life, you're unable to think about the next 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. Of course, if you're practicing Krishna consciousness, which is beyond even the Vedic social system, you should be able to know that I'll be reading these books, I'll be chanting Hare Krishna, some or other I'll be glorifying Krishna, I'll be following the regular principles. But in terms of the structure of life, the framework, it's very difficult for people to see. And they don't understand how their whole ability to get a grip on their life has been totally destroyed. Totally destroyed. Because of the inundation of stimuli coming from the media, advertising, what takes the center stage in your life is simply, I'm feeling this at the moment. How am I going to satisfy it? This is what's going on, you see. Everyone's been converted into a consumer. Remember we discussed what is the kind of buyer that shop owners like the best? Huh? You remember? What? Impulse buyer. Impulse. Just, look at that. I think I'll buy it. Without considering so much the price or the quality. Just, Shop owners love those kind of buyers. Immediately, yes, of course. But the real cynical kind of buyers, they're a pain in the neck. What is this really made of? And do you think I can get this cheaper somewhere else? And, you get out of here. You either buy it or not. So the whole world has been turned into a mass conglomerate of impulse buyers. That's the plan. It's great for business. Your whole world, what is center stage in your consciousness is your
impulses.
I feel this, I feel that. Therefore, I have to buy this, I have to get that, I have to do this, I have to do that. That's how people are these days. They don't understand it. They don't understand that their whole ability to structure their life has been destroyed. They can't even see themselves going through the phases of life. If you ask them, think about how would you feel when you're old. They can't do that.
Old?
They don't have any basis for viewing the panning out of their life. They can't think about it. Therefore, they're just bewildered. I don't know. When I'm old, I guess I'll kind of feel like I am now. I haven't. On the airplane, I saw one article in the Airlines magazine. I look at the Airlines magazine. Sometimes they have practical information about the airlines and new routes and things like that. So anyway, there was this article about a DJ. He was in his 40s. International DJ. Grew up in New York City and, you know, he was so popular, he would spend his summers in Italy and doing huge festivals in that area. And so the question was asked him, how long do you think you can go on doing this? He was describing how it's hard work. He trains every day at the gym because he has to stand up on his feet, you know, 6 hours. From 12 midnight to 6 a.m. in the morning, he's just to stand on his feet. Yes, you're so tired, but you just got to keep going. And so he was asked, well, how long do you think you can go on like this? He said, well, I don't know. We'll just see what happens, you know. Got a lot of money coming in. He called it streams of revenue. I guess that's a tasteful way of saying, you know, making money this way, that way. He says, I have quite a few streams of revenue coming in. It's just a cool way of saying, instead of saying I'm making a lot of money this way, that way, just streams of revenue. That makes it less materialistic. So he couldn't think of his life beyond what he's doing. All he could think of is, well, I own a house in New York, I own a house in Italy, I'll just see how it happens, you know? Oh, here's what he said. Well, when will I stop? When the time comes when I feel I'm no longer relevant. Meaning when people are no longer paying for my services. instead of speaking normal language, he has to use, you know, very, you know, so-called sophisticated. When I feel I'm no longer relevant, then I'll stop. All I had to say is when no one's going to pay me anymore, I'll stop. No, that's just too ordinary, sad. When I feel I'm no longer relevant. And then what will you do? He couldn't say, all I could think was, I've got my house in Italy and my house in New York. You know, I've got my girlfriend. He's in his 40s, you know. He's been doing this for about 10 years, 15 years. Internationally famous. He made it. But he can't think of his life. He can't get a view of his whole life. He's just basically living from moment to moment, just like the music he plays says to do. He doesn't understand. He's a victim of his own business. So please, don't let your life be like this. Don't live your life aimlessly, just subject to the impulses you feel at the moment. Don't be an impulse shopper. What's the best way to shop, even though the shop owners hate it? Who knows? Huh? Yes. You get on the internet and you check for all the cheapest prices, check the best quality. And then you go, if you have to walk into a shop, you walk in there already prepared with all the facts at your hand so you don't get overwhelmed. Because sometimes, in case you haven't noticed, the salespersons, they can be so artificially nice or insistent that you just totally forget, you know, what you had in mind. Never happened to any? Why don't I take this? Everyone's buying that anyway. I mean, really, I don't think you'll find a better deal than this. We're different from other shops. We care for our customers. Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. So just like the best way to shop is to be discerning. Similarly, the best way to live life is to be discerning. We're trying to instill that capacity for discernment here. We're trying to give you the skills so that you'll live your life in a sober way. Not that just because you feel something. Well, I guess that's it. I feel that, so, you know. Just the way life is. Huh? I felt something, so. La-di-da. You have to see your life in its whole context, in its whole development, from babyhood to childhood, to teenage life, to young adulthood, to adulthood, old age, death. You have to see. That's what unfolds. The shud-vikar. The six phases of bodily development and diminishment. So please understand this. Most people cannot think of their life properly. And yet they're so proud. Not only has the inundation of stimuli from advertising, the media, destroyed people's ability, also intoxication. People are crazy enough because of hearing from television, radio, here, there, everywhere, hearing constant messages bombarding them, pushing them. Use your senses in this way. Satisfy your senses in that way. And then on top of that, they add heaps of intoxication. How's anyone going to be able to discern, to be able to understand what is their real benefit in life? You can travel all over the world, as I've done for 25 years, and you'll simply see the same thing going on everywhere. Where there was, like, material village culture, village traditions, it's all being destroyed now. The whole world's being turned into a global supermarket. It's better for business that way. Why should people in Peru dress one way, people in New Zealand dress another way, people in France dress another way? Better for business is that everybody buys the same style. Then your business can produce one style for the whole world, sell huge quantities, and make a lot of money. It's all economics. You want the economy of scale, as it's called, to get bigger and bigger. It's much cheaper to produce 1 million of a certain type of clothes. And you can do that if you know everybody in the world wants to wear these kind of pants. So with advertising, with television, you destroy the local village cultures, whatever they used to wear in the villages, you know. And now everybody wants to wear Calvin Klein. So Calvin Klein, he can produce millions of pants. Whereas before, when people were clinging to their particular local village cultures, no, they would just stick to their traditional garb. But that's not good for international business. Better to get the whole world to have the same taste, and you can produce and clothe the whole world and make heaps of money. So this is what's going on. just like older people in New Zealand have told me. In the 1980s, there were less consumer goods available, but they were of much higher quality. They were more expensive, but they lasted so much longer. And you knew the persons who were making the clothes, making the shoes. Now, New Zealand is flooded with so many products from other places, especially China. Cheaper in price, but very cheap in quality, and you don't know who's manufactured them. There's no feeling of obligation to provide quality. But the ordinary person is happy. Oh, so much to choose from. Oh, they're cheap things from China. They're expensive things from the USA. Oh, so many things to buy. Oh. Whereas it actually was psychologically better 25 years ago when there weren't so many choices. But what choices were there were better quality. In other words, instead of having to buy, let's say, a singlet t-shirt every 6 months for a cheap price, you pay a higher price back then, but the t-shirt would last 5 years. But people don't understand that. I'd have to wait 5 years before I went shopping again. Better let it wear out quickly. Pay a pretty cheap price for something cheap, let it wear out quickly. You can go shopping again. Gives you something to buy. It's so nice to buy. So we're explaining these things so you can see the social forces at work that have destroyed people's lives. Now, what are you going to do about it? Do you feel motivated enough to get your life together and stay on track for the rest of your life? You should think how you're going to handle yourself throughout your years. All right, any questions? Yes.
In this chapter we read in the Prabhupada's book of all the devotees who have developed a pure transcendent love for Krishna, how they showed us she said at the best for us.
Can I have a tissue, please?
And at the same time we also hear
everyone is the best in Vrindavan. Just like Srila Prabhupada, he would arrive at the New York temple and say, I can see that this temple is the best. All the devotees would say, Jai Prabhupada. And he would fly to Chicago, I can see this temple is the best. Jai Prabhupada. It's all the best on the spiritual platform. Lord Chaitanya has certified Ramya Kachit Upasana Vajavadu Vargena Ya Kalpita. There's no better method of loving Krishna than that demonstrated by the gopis of Vrindavan. That refers both to the young gopis as well as the older. The refers to those in Madhurya Ras and also those in Vatsalya Ras. But there's always finer print. So if you want to go into the finer print, ultimately it's established that Srimati Radharani is the dearest devotee of Krishna. It's like a camera with a zoom lens. You have to see that's the way the Vedic literature is. Srimad Bhagavatam especially, you can go the deeper and deeper levels, layers. So you always have to know what layer you're dealing with. Just like, what is that food that has, that vegetable thing that has layers? It's,
onion.
Don't know about onions. you eat those? What's the, artichokes, yes? Yeah, artichokes have different layers. And you want to get to the center, right? Anything else?
Mm-hmm. The most fascinating of the Vedic civilization became the soliciting of the tapes of the citizens. So I was wondering how secure protection to the woman and engaged in prostitution in the name of using them as their actors, and how the children from that union affect the civilization in Vedic time.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I ever thought about that one. there's always, I think, maybe it was in Christchurch, I explained that without the ties of Dharma, without the obligations of Dharma, no man will truly be satisfied with one woman. Impossible. It's the psychological nature of a man to want more than one woman. But because the Dharma is there, the religious principles, the man conforms to the religious principles. But if you let male psychology just go its own way, men always want more than one woman. They always have to dally, they always have to, you know, have a little something going on. That's why many ladies, actually, I've realized, not here, of course, but in other places, they come to Krishna consciousness really thinking that, you know, when I get married, Krishna consciousness will force the husband to be true to me. Yes, I've seen that's a motivation in other places. Many ladies, they come to Krishna consciousness looking for a husband and thinking, In Krishna consciousness, the husband has to be faithful. And they practice Krishna consciousness for that reason. Doesn't sound strange to you, huh? And in South Africa, the Indian knows all, and many ladies will admit, yes, yes. I wanted a good man, and I wanted the guarantee he would stay with me, so I became Krishna conscious. I make sure he's Krishna conscious. A man's psychology, without the guidance of Dharma, the man's psychology is he's always checking out other ladies. A normal female psychology is to be satisfied with one man. Like someone was telling me a few days ago, I want to belong to someone. That is normal female psychology. But male psychology is... And the men always have it rationalized if they get caught by their wife. But she was just a toy. She was a nothing. Everyone knows you're my main thing, you know? She was just a little recreation, you know? They expect the wife to understand. You understand, right? We don't know. And of course, most women, they just get devastated. How could you do this to me? I gave you everything. And you're just dallying with these others. How could you treat me like this? And the men can't, many men can't understand it. What's the big deal? I mean, it was just some, you know, overnight. It was a one-night thing, a little bit of recreation. You know, I am a passionate guy, and I didn't want to bug you too much, you know. Just a little toy, a little thing, you know. I didn't give her any of my money. Men think like that. You know, practical. I didn't spend so much money on her, you know. It's just like going to the gym, you know? The ladies are just totally freaked out, you know? Like, that's it! It's the end! So, there's always going to be a class of men who don't follow Dharma, even in Vedic society. So therefore, Vedic society had prostitutes to keep these men from polluting young girls. So the prostitutes in that way indirectly were doing a service. They were keeping wandering men from disturbing young girls. But now, of course, these days, people don't look down upon prostitution that much anymore. Give it a nice name, sex workers or night workers. And anyway, every young girl's turned into a prostitute, so what's the big deal? But in Vedic civilization, it's practical. It recognizes there are going to be some men who just are not going to do the right thing. So better there's a section of ladies to service them and keep these men from polluting young girls. But nowadays, just everyone's polluted. The young girls want to be polluted. The men are happy to, you know, help them in the process. One girl in her late teens, she had a boyfriend who was 35. She was justifying it, but I was actually his first girlfriend. I suppose I said, oh, now I understand. He didn't have, you know, anyone before me. Oh, right. She felt like, you know, this is very distinctive now. The whole lust affair had a special aura of distinction because I was his first real girlfriend. Big deal. But that's how low things are getting these days. You know, you look for these distinctions. Someone else told me some years ago. You know, this is how low the age of Kali gets. You just look for some value, some credit somewhere. He only had one other girlfriend before me. Oh, I offer my humble obeisances. He only had one other girlfriend before you. Oh, he's just definitely a special man. I'm just telling you things I've heard. Everyone has to make their situation look special. So, the girls want to be polluted. The men are happy to pollute them.